Hi, everybody. Welcome to the first episode of the Science to Suits podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Daniel Jacome.
And I'm Iris, also a co-host of the podcast.
And we have our first guest today. His name is Ian Johnston. He is an investment associate at the Engine Venture Capital firm. Ian, it's great to have you here.
Happy to be here. Happy to chat. This is interesting being on a podcast. It's like a dream come true, I'm gonna be honest with you.
Yeah, you're famous now.
Officially famous.
Yeah, it's our first rodeo too, so it's going to be exciting to see how it goes. But maybe we can start off. Can we just get an idea of your background, where you went to school, how you got here, anything about you that we want to know?
Yeah. So I started kind of my higher learnings at Rutgers University doing biomedical engineering. I worked heavily in microfluidics. I was really interested in kind of integration of technology and healthcare. I was developing assays to detect, you know, inflammation in real time and high risk surgery. So for me, a lot of almost everything that I did was about how to translate it into actually helping people. That was kind of my driving force. Upon graduation, there was kind of a component where I was very locked into the technology side, and I was interested in the biology, which led me to doing the pharmacology program at UPenn. I worked in cardiovascular and hematologic pharmacology. So I was still, I leveraged kind of that microfluidic background to kind of model blood vessels, induce various pathologies around thrombosis, vascular wall damage, et cetera, and test novel therapeutics. Again, really trying to work on that translational side. And got to really collaborate with physicians and people who were working in the emergency rooms. And so that kind of started to shed light on what that translation really means, not only to the research side, but to what it means for those people and like the importance of what they're really trying to do. During my time at Penn, I was just like, I'm going to try to do a little bit of everything. And so I ended up working in the tech transfer office, the PCI, Center for Innovation, doing that for a few years, looking at technologies across the Penn community. Was part of PBG, the consulting club, for, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, possibly. Moved my way up to VP of consulting. Just lived in the PBG world for a while as well. And that ended up leading me to doing life science strategy consulting at Putnam Associates here in Boston, where I'm at. Did that for 2 years. Learned a lot, and I'm happy we can definitely dive into that a bit. And then at some point, the Engine VC firm, which started in 2017, opened up an investment associate role, and just their mission and everything they were doing, just like it was at the core of what I wanted to do. It was at the core of what I've always kind of wanted to do. And I'm happy to dive into that as well. But joined them in September of last year and been loving it since.
Very cool. Yeah, I think a lot of us here in grad school are in that boat of we're going to try a little bit of everything and seeing what sticks. So a bit of a broad question here. So you said that the VC firm was everything you wanted to do. So maybe can we get a high level understanding of what venture capital firms do in the overall life cycle of business and how they help things actually become real?
Yeah. So they VC firms play an interesting role. And then I think the Engine adds some additional factors to it based on kind of what we're trying to accomplish. So I'll definitely start with the VC up front. When you think kind of the cycles of business thinking of like the intro, the growth, the maturity of company, you know, try to life cycle extension, VC really plays a role in all of it, up to kind of when companies go public and kind of doing their own thing, because VCs as a whole really looking for those exit opportunities. It's like IPO, merger and acquisition, whatever it is, to get that return on investment. But realistically, across the whole board, there's VC firms that are very focused on the front end, like the Engine, versus VC firms who are focused on the back end. But each play their role, and there's really kind of a synergy that you can find between VC firms where we work with firms that work really well for our later investments, but are interested in the same type of principles and components. When thinking of the Engine specifically, we play a really important role up front, kind of our mission, what we were born out of. When we were born out of MIT in 2017, was to help the translation of technology from the benchtop to commercialization. So we are interested in pre-seed, seed, series A investment. So right up front, people coming right out of PhD, just have an idea, never founded a company before, you know, first time founders, like that's what we love and work with because of our mission to help that translation. And I think in each of those phases of business, whether that be the intro and growth through kind of like that life cycle, you have different components that make you important to the companies. I think early on, we play a really important role to help founders understand what it is to be a CEO. We help them understand how to build their teams. What are those upfront hurdles? What are the milestones that help them raise in the later line? And so the way the engine's kind of structured particularly is we have like our VC firm, but then we have like lab space and the infrastructure piece where we have lab space and office space and machine shop, et cetera. And then we have like an ecosystem component where it's like we connect you to people. We have people internally that can help build your skills and help you find the CTO or whatever you need to help it out. And so it's the where you play, where the VCs play in the life cycle of the business very changes what their role is going to be. But for us being early on, it's about the technology, it's about the people, it's about moving them forward in a way that gives them a longevity to succeed. I think on a broader scale, the other ways that where VC plays a role that is like less kind of touched on or less thought of quantitatively is kind of we have a really important role in society in like how what trends we impact and the people that lead those trends. I was reading an article the other day where it said AI investments like increased, but the number of companies that actually got those investments dropped drastically. So like AI as a whole trend, we're not, VCs aren't going to impact if that's going to happen or not. AI is going to be here. Like we can't impact that at all. But we do by who we invested in, by how the field has played that, you now have selected, you know, these thousand companies versus the other 5,000 that are out there trying to make it. And then additionally, as you do that, you also think about like who are the people that you've chosen to invest in. And at the engine, we take, you know, diversity and all these other and all of its forms and all those components very seriously. So I think we consciously play a role in understanding what the new CEOs of major corporations and companies and things will look like by who we decide to invest in. That's not true for every VC firm, but I think for those who are early on and helping people get out of labs, that is a crucial component that should be like top of mind.
That is amazing. So Ian, you just expanded on what the overall goal of VC firms is and what the engine focuses on, which seems to be really unique compared to some of the more traditional VC firms out there. Do you mind briefly describing what your specific role is at the engine and also kind of walk us through your typical day?
Yeah, sure. So just as like, I guess a little bit of background, like the engine, we kind of function in looking at impacting society in kind of three main buckets, being climate, human health, and advanced systems. Climate looks like, you know, decarbonization, electrification of the grid, those types of things. Human health can be tissue engineering, new therapies, et cetera, food and agriculture innovations that help reduce, you know, starvation in the country and, you know, and food deserts, things of that nature. Advanced systems kind of touches into AI and a lot of the other advanced computing, things of that nature that additionally will play important factors in society. For me, I'm on the investment team, particularly at the engine. So what that looks like for my daily thing, I kind of think of it in percentages. It's the consultant in me, can't get out of making buckets here. I think the first bucket is sourcing. So a huge component of my day is reaching out to founders, filtering through the founders who come in, talking to founders all day, kind of understanding what the new technology is, if it's a good fit for the engine, understanding, you know, what's their vision, what's the market opportunity, all the kind of key factors that we consider for an investment. And you know, I don't think that's unique to the engine specifically, but I think for the engine, the kind of factors that we end up thinking about, I think even more importantly is like that impact, not only now, but that impact like on a global scale, what does that look like? Is that going to change how we interact as humans, how communities interact, how society kind of functions as a whole? And I think that's very important for us. When we're looking at kind of new deals, we're looking for the home run swing. A perfect example of that's like Commonwealth Fusion is, you know, a company in our portfolio it's like, you know, making a fusion energy is like, yeah, that's pretty crazy. Like, awesome stuff, pretty important stuff. Like, if that comes to fruition, we change the world. Another one of the first ones I looked at actually was BioBot Analytics. And it's like, they're doing wastewater epidemiology, tracking COVID in wastewater. They can track other things in wastewater, you know, metabolites, opioids, et cetera. And it's like, yeah, again, like, now that it's, I think when we think about sourcing, it's like one of those things where when that company is formed, if you can't imagine what the world was like without it, and it's like, how did we not have that? I think it's a great idea. And like, BioBot fits in that bucket for me, like 100%. It's just like, how did we not track what was going in our water? How did we not track, like, how, you know, lack of food in certain areas impacted education, or opioids impacted, you know, growth in certain areas of the country? And so those are the kind of things where, when we think about sourcing, that probably 30% of my time's locked in there, it is thinking not only about the economics and technology, blah, blah, it's like the human impact and what that looks like for us and society as a whole. I'd say the next bucket is like, probably kind of deal flow, as I like to call it. It's like, all right, we like something. Then you go through the diligence process, working internally, talking to people, et cetera. That's something like, I think, like PBG, that's like a perfect, like, if you were in PBG in consulting, that bucket is incredibly easy for you. It's just like the secondary research, primary research bucket of life, like that we function in. So that's not too fancy as much as just doing it and being good at it. I would say the other component of probably the other, what, 40% I'm at leftover, I would say the other 20% is kind of the internal components of the engine. I mean, we're 3 years old. There's a lot of, we're still growing, we're learning. And I think something that's really great is we're very conscious of like what we know and don't know. And like, we're trying to do something special. We're trying to go for these home run hits. And the best way we're going to get there is by learning along the way. And so we do a lot of internal components to analyzing ourselves, analyzing others, understanding how we can get better, what things can be standardized, what can't, and growing internally. And I would say that, and I would say modestly 20%, because I think there's a huge component of it where you're thinking about it on your own independently sometimes, where you're like, oh, you know what, we should do this, and we should do this, we could be better. And so that's something that's like incredibly important and will be important for us to grow. We just started our second fund. So like, there's other firms who've been doing this forever, but we have like great experience in our leadership and great experiences going through. So they bring loads of insights, particularly from someone like me, who's like, does not have a business degree background at all, but they're like, it is a conscious effort to improve ourselves at every facet of the process. And then I'll say the last 20% is probably dedicated to portfolio companies. As I mentioned, we have like the infrastructure piece where we have lab space, et cetera, which we offer to our portfolio companies. But the ecosystem bucket, that internal, external ecosystem, that internal bucket is like us working with the portfolio companies, you know, across the board and kind of what we do. We, you know, building models, analysis, whatever it needs to kind of happen, or you know, just building connections for them. And that's kind of why we like, I think, why we invest so early in the pre-seed, seed, series A, because you get to kind of be the first hands in the door. You get to help break bad habits. You help get to have those conversations earlier. You get to understand the vision and the dream of the founders and understand like, how do we facilitate and nurture this to its full fruition and manifest this dream to something better and bigger, and what are those hurdles we're going to run into. And I think outside of maybe myself, most of the people at the engine have like founded a company at some point, and like, so they've seen the turmoil that can pop up. And so that portfolio, that 20%, even though it's like 20% from myself, it's bigger for other individuals in the engine who are just like, that is their thing. They are good at it, and they roll, and it spans like to the regulatory space, to the, you know, finding manufacturer distribution, like it's support across the board. And that's something that I think is really unique to the engine, because sometimes I think there's a misconception that like VC is just like, we give you money, you write a check, and I'll see you in 18 months. And I'm like, I'll see you in 5 years and I want my return or what, you know, there's some game to it. And for us, like, it's so much more than that. And I just want to, I think the other part of that, I think is really important. Most VC firms have like a timeline of like 10 to 12 years for return on investment kind of thing, or maybe shorter. We have like an 18 year timeline that's available. It's not that we're like always looking for every investment to be out that long, but if it takes that long, we have that flexibility. So like, again, we're playing the long game, where VC is a long game as a whole, but because it's like VC in this tough tech space that we function, we're supporting them as much as possible upfront, so they get the best jump off as possible.
So that sounds like a really cool mission. I have a bit of a nerdy question. I'm wondering how a VC firm investing in things as important but novel as nuclear fusion de-risks itself to a point where it feels comfortable investing in something. How does that work?
So I think to your first question of like, you know, how do you de-risk kind of that, the journey, like across the board? I think you can kind of split that up into a few buckets. I think first is like the team, right? Like when you meet a founder, and we're very founder focused, when you meet that founder, there's like, do you feel they have the credibility? Do they have the drive to do those kind of things? And like, have they been doing this research? We're very like in tune with kind of, you know, scientific founders, people who were like PhDs, postdocs, who have this dream of building this technology outside of that. So I think the first step of that is like the human connection. Like when you meet this person, do you see their vision? Do you believe in that vision? Does that align with the impact of the level of impact that we're trying to implement? But then also, you know, like on a very personal level, do you see them being the person that can drive that dream? I think, you know, VC, like we play in an interesting space where like we can, if we need the CEO, we need that person who's driving the car. We can help give you Google Maps. We can change your tires. We can give you snacks along the way, whatever it is. But like, you need to be the one on the pedal. Like that's the person who needs the pedal. So I think part of the de-risking upfront is finding founders who have a passion, have a dream. That's like, that is what they looked for. I think then from there, you can go to kind of the technological bucket. Publications are always good. Scientific publications, always helpful. And I mean, I think that's what makes the engine so unique. It's hard finding a geographical area that has higher level of educational institutions, such as MIT, Harvard, Tufts, BU, BC, but like Northeastern. You have all these institutions right here, plus quite a few pharma companies up here. You have this nice kind of nexus of those factors where when technologies come out, you have a knowledge base to put that against, to say, you know, is this unique? Is this special? And these institutions are almost generally always doing something that is unique and special and novel. And so so there's a de-risking there of just understanding the space. And we do have some internal endeavors to understand certain spaces that are interesting to us.
So Ian, another question for you. Are there any particular skills that graduate students bring to the table that VC firms value highly?
Yeah. I think on the front end, like the reading papers, analyzing, coming to hypotheses, very valuable from PhD, like straight up important, because when you look at a deal, it's going to be, is this novel? Like that's the question up front. Like, is this unique? Does this have a substantial impact? And so you have to do some background, and it's like, you have a hypothesis, like, yes, this is unique, or no, it's not. And so like being able to come to that conclusion and doing it quickly and efficiently is like incredibly important. I think that's a skill that like all PhDs, just from reading papers, understanding the biology on a broad sense, can be extremely valuable. I think additionally in that vein, coming from like the pharmacology PhD, you have the ability to kind of, different firms focus in different areas. So you may be even more valuable at a firm that focuses on diagnostic tests if you did diagnostics in your PhD. So like that skill set and the value of it can change based on which type of VC firm you go to. I think from being in a PhD and then probably parts of consulting are super really valuable. One being like presenting, like making slides, communicating the information. That is just like a hard skill that just like it fits into like being able to communicate information, and whether that be internally or externally. Part of the VC realm as a whole is building connections and networking. So, you know, we, like, for example, the Engine has like a Tough Tech Summit every year where we host people and we have, you know, people present, et cetera. And it's like being able to be part of that, having those face-to-face time helps you and your firm. People think of you, they know you, your name becomes brand. And so being able to present is incredibly important. I think beyond that, I think honestly, some of the best skills you can have, learn some Excel. Learn some Excel, like everybody. I think beyond that, I would say the one skill that I think isn't emphasized enough that is incredibly important is networking. And it's like, in it, even though it's like we talk about networking and you have like networking events and all these things, the actual importance of actually like just talking to people one-on-one and like actually making a connection and like them and you being part of their mind is incredibly important. Even the Engine job that came up, a friend of a friend told a friend and they told me, because they were like, oh, I know you love this stuff. As a full disclaimer, me and my wife are vegan and like love the whole climate world. Like, we want to own a no kill dog shelter and an elephant rescue at some point, maybe together. I don't know if elephants and dogs get along, but we'll figure it out. And so like that, it becomes this, but like people knowing that I loved that component of life, people knowing that like VC was interesting to me is what led to this pathway. So it's like, it's not just enough to go to like networking sessions and drink and have appetizers and talk. It's about actually forming connections and having people know, like having being when something comes up, they say, oh yeah, I know a person, and that's Daniel, that's Iris. And like they make that connection.
Sounds like be a human, be a great human, but be a normal human too.
Yeah. Be really good techno side, but like better have some human skills for sure.
So Ian, I guess from your answers, it seems like there are definitely ways the graduate training can add value in the venture capital realm in different ways, whether that is by leveraging our communication skills or our Microsoft Excel skills. So that's really exciting. We're, I guess, just wrapping up here. So the last question for you, Ian, what would you recommend for graduate students interested in breaking into the venture capital world after graduation? And maybe also, can you comment a little bit on opportunities after VC?
I think on breaking in up front, I think don't let like the structure of grad school or just like lives going to grad school kind of dictate your scope. I think even for me, like coming out of grad school, my brain said there was consulting, like industry, working in pharma or academia. And this is like, that's not actually true, but it's that's how it feels. I mean, I think for most people in PhD, you did well in undergrad in high school, so you get to a good undergrad school. You did well in undergrad in a science space, so you get to a good grad school, and you do well in grad school to get to blank. And like, it becomes this very linear equation, and it's just so much more than that. And that's why I think I have so much admiration and love for founders, whether we invest in them or not, because they are some of the bravest people in the world, where like they are taking a leap, whether they finish school or not, they are taking a leap off a cliff and believing they can fly. And that is just like astounding to me.
That was awesome. I can't think of a better note to end on. I love it. Ian, thank you so much for coming to our podcast, talking to us about venture capital. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much for your time today, Ian.
No problem. I'd love to come back and make fun of Daniel. It'll be great.
Oh, anytime.